Welcome and welcome back to our podcast. We, me and my dad Gerhard, are back with another episode with our second international guest. And perhaps you, as our listeners, have already heard from him or even know him already. Our guest today is Nick Johnson. He's a very present personality on LinkedIn. That's also where I saw him first. And of course, my dad talked a lot about him when he met him at the coaching program. He's a global keynote speaker, a master coach, a best-selling author, and also a supervised counselor and psychotherapist. That's what I gathered from his LinkedIn profile. It's up to him to tell us more about him later. And he's also an Ironman triathlete, which he also has in common with my dad. And I'm very excited for our conversation, Nick. Welcome to you. And before we start, I would just ask you to introduce yourself a little bit. Tell us about your person, what you do, so just that the listeners get a better picture of you and what you do.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Rebecca, for the warm welcome. And Gerhard, nice to see you. And to all listeners, great to see you as well. So I was born in Sweden, educated in Australia, and then I spent the last 22 years living and working mainly in Asia. I worked up the corporate ladder, working my way up, you could say, elbowing my way to the top, and then crashing with burnout and isolation and even alcohol addictions. And from that, I crashed to hit my rock bottom. And from there, I rebuilt my life and come back. And now then, as you introduced me as a coach, a therapist and so on. And the way I done it is by investing in all these courses and trainings from all around the world to grow myself. And then I feel an obligation to pass it on to the rest of the world to help others. So that's in a short summary, basically, how my life is. And I can say that I live mainly in Phuket, Thailand, when it's winter in Europe. And I live base myself in Sweden when it's June, July, August, when you can cycle outdoors.
Okay. It's very interesting to hear. I would just like you, I'd like to ask you, first of all, to, of course, tell us a bit more detailed things about your journey, how you got to coaching and everything and what you did to help yourself out of this rock bottom that you hit. And then also, just as a bit of an introduction into the topic, what has been like your work with the different generations and your view on the generational dialogue and conversations that you've already had, and just an overall experience from yourself.
Yeah, sure. So if we go back to my rock bottom then, you know, really being that isolated space and not really talking to anyone about the struggles I had. I used unhealthy coping mechanisms to deal with it because I didn't really speak to anyone. I didn't trust to my HR or my boss. I didn't have a coach or a mentor I was open and honest with at the time. So I started to overeating and also drinking excessively. That was the way I coped with it. But as I came out of that, through sobriety, then I start to have this incredible growth mindset, because I then thought, well, if this works for my eating disorder and for my alcohol addiction to speak up and seek help, what about if I, in all areas of my life, seek help, ask for help, and get the best there are in every field? How will that impact my life? So it was that curiosity that kicked in. And it was then, of course, natural to really double down on my coaching skills, because that's all about listening and asking questions. So that's what I did, but I then applied it also to my triathlon. So while I was also doing Ironman events before my challenge, now I reached out to ask who are the best triathlon coaches in the world, who can help me and so on. And I applied it in every single area of my life to really try to grow myself. And that's really when things kicked in. So I think that's about that. I can come back to answer your last question also about generations. Perhaps just give you a chance to see if there's something you want to add there.
Okay.
No, it's good. It's fine. It's really interesting. Nick, we know us, I think, since more than 2 years. And I know that especially also the vulnerabilities and the man's health is a big part of your life and also where you would like to help the community. Coming back to this generational dialogue, what is the or what was the experience in your former career when you were also in the corporate world, when you came as a junior and you said you were using your elbows to climb the ladder? How were you dealing with this, I would say, conflict at that time then?
Well, I spent most of my years in senior positions in Vietnam, so a communist country, very strict, very direct. My leaders were very firm, military style, army style, line them up kind of leadership. That was who my bosses were, and that's the kind of leadership that I had to apply for my team. I can remember even in Vietnam, because also there's a lot of issues with the staff and it could be theft and so on. We would have a security company to manage to keep an eye on the security company. We would have fingerprints for every single door. We would have CCTV all over the shop to really look at things and try to capture things. And despite the there were thefts, there were kickbacks, people taking, commissions of suppliers and so on. So my job was almost as a general director for a company there, almost like to be a police. And so that's the kind of leadership style that I formed. And I brought that with me when I also moved to other roles in other countries, leading extremely firm and, setting examples. If someone broke the rules, it was literally to call the police then and, really make it, bring in lawyers and make a big scene about it to show that I was strong and that I was a powerful boss. So that's sort of the leadership that I came in, and that didn't really serve me later on in other companies and countries when that was not appreciated.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It's very interesting, because my dad also kind of teasered the next question that I wanted to ask you, because I, of course, looked at your LinkedIn and I've read through some posts of you, and you also talk a lot about your journey, where you are now in your leadership, and you're also very passionate about men's mental health, which is very understandable given what you have gone through. And I think I've also read that your wife is also active in mental health work, but I think for women. And it's just very interesting because that just creates a really unique perspective for both of you. And I wanted to ask you if you could just tell us a bit more about this, and how you think the different generations are dealing with mental health, and if there is anything you have noticed.
Yeah, so indeed, I sort of work mainly with men, I should say. I run a men's group and so on, while my wife, she run peer groups and knowledge sharing groups, but she also run a woman leadership group. So I think it's important that we have safe spaces for all. We all need, our safe space, perhaps to talk within the same gender and mixed groups as well. So we are both very, very passionate about that. And as it come to the different generations, it seems like the older generation, let's say I'm 50 plus, so let's talk about 50 plus, seem to be struggling a bit in general to connect with the younger generation, especially if you lead like I led, that directive leadership, delegating down without really, checking in and being the good coach or the listener. It tend to backfire. With the younger generation, they want to be involved, they want to feel that this is their idea, they want to take ownership and so on at a completely different level. So many countries are now struggling with that. And in the part of the world where I spend a lot of my time is Singapore, and the success of Singapore is perhaps that, that perfect plan, that always looking ahead, structure things. And it's really that top-down delegation that has made Singapore working so well and so successful, but they are now becoming, victim of their own success almost in that sense, because the senior leaders in Singapore who have that kind of leadership style are burning out because they delegate stuff to younger generation who maybe are just quiet because they didn't really ask for this. They don't feel involved, so they don't also understand what to do. And therefore, perhaps, they miss the deadline and there's no communication between them. And therefore, maybe the blame game starts. And before we know it, the younger staff have perhaps resigned. And then they start again, taking all the job on their own shoulders. So it's a big challenge there. And they are really, really struggling with that coaching mindset. And that's what I see in Singapore, but also in many other countries where you deal with the older generation and the younger generation, because completely different mindset.
Okay. This is what I want to ask you a little bit more in detail, Nick, because I was listening to your answer, and especially I think you said something which we had also heard in our latest episodes. It is about communication, and what you said also was then starting the playing game. Is there something you can share with us where you have, for example, an example in your trainings, coachings you give, where you can share with the listeners, where you have seen this in a very strong way?
Yes, I it comes up typically in the 360s. That 360, for those who don't know, it's basically what typically the HR department is sending out for a senior leader, where you have the direct reports, the peers, and also the manager who they report to really fill in an assessment about the leadership behavior. The leader will also do a self-assessment of themselves, and then it's anonymous, and then the leader see this. And typically here, things will stand out. If the leader has that kind of directive, old style leadership style, it will stand out there, because the people who fill it in will feel safe because it's anonymous. And then typically there, it will be things like that will show up, that this leader give us big task with short notice. They just delegate it. They don't check in with us. They don't ask if I have the understanding. They show no empathy, and all of these kind of things will show up there, and also perhaps saying that they set unrealistic deadlines and so on. And then I would typically, as a coach, have then a conversation with a leader, and I will be called in to work with the leader on addressing this. And then they will be typically in the starting point, typically they will be in denial. Perhaps they say, oh, they are too lazy, they don't have the right mindset to work here, and they just don't want to learn, they don't want to do the job, they're just spoiled. So that's that side of the story then. And then when you're digging into it and asking a little bit deeper, perhaps it is that older generation maybe have gone through a lot of challenges. Maybe they grew up in a post-war era, or coming from poverty in Asia. Also, that generation was poor, and therefore perhaps they've been grinding through. They've been really, really happy to come where they are. And perhaps the younger generation have not grown up in poverty, have maybe always been served a breakfast on the table. And therefore, it's very difficult to compare here the generations. But that's where I see a lot of tension between there.
For me, for my understanding, and maybe this is what some listeners ask themselves also, would you say that Asia is also driven by money, which means if you have rich families or poor families, and this is reflecting then also, somehow the leadership style in the companies, or would you say it is more a cultural topic? What is your opinion on that?
No, I think it goes across. It doesn't matter if it's money involved, according to me, and it also doesn't really matter what country it is. It can be a culture in a family, in a company, and it can be anywhere. It's the leader, the top leader of that country, that family, who sets the tone. And within that, we can set our own culture, right? So it might be that you go to a workplace where your leader has the old directive style, but it doesn't mean that you bring that home. You might have a very open culture at home where everyone can speak up, including having conversation, asking your children questions rather than disciplining them.
Good.
Yeah, I would like to follow up with this because you talked a lot about the differences and complications that come up with, for example, in the workplace when the younger generation is taking over or they have to take over. And I wanted to ask you what the biggest generational misunderstanding is from your point of view in workplaces, but also in leadership teams.
Yeah, so I think the biggest generational difference and where the challenges are is also how to work. I think the older generation grew up without digital devices, without laptops, while the younger generation is much more adaptive to that. So therefore, it's easier for the younger generation to have a hybrid world where you can connect virtually and so on. While perhaps we hear many of the older generation who prefer, oh, we should be in the office, we need to meet in person, and so on. And also, that links back to the purpose and values, right? So, the younger generation care more about their purpose, not only the company's purpose and mission. So, that's where it's a bit of a tug of war and that's where it's really hard to make that work because they're coming from two completely different camps. So, it's about having those conversations. And if we're looking at the pandemic, then hybrid work was there. Then after the pandemic, typically the companies pushed everyone back in the workforce, but now we are back into hybrid work again. And if you want to attract younger generation, if you want to have a future of your company, you got to have hybrid work. Otherwise, you're not going to be in the game.
Do you think that's more of a this change to kind of hybrid work and also the change in the mindset towards work with the younger generation? Do you see this as a more positive or negative thing?
Well, I think it's a must to have that mindset shift where hybrid working is the way forward. Just like we have to accept that AI will take jobs, it is about what we can do and doing the best for ourselves, for our family, and for our companies and for the people around us. That is what I think is at the heart of everything.
I know that Rebecca has two or three more questions, but I want to ask you one thing, Nick, and this is where is speaking about your journey becoming this person you are right now and comparing the person you were in the past, which means from the outside it was more or less that you were successful, you were climbing the ladder in the corporate world, you were, I think these were your words, you were leading also a company, but finally it turns out that you were eating too much, you were drinking. What was really the turning point in your life, and what would you give the listeners also, or owners, CEOs in the world as a learning from your journey? And finally, really give them your view on exactly the top and the downside of the life then in this view.
Yeah, so the turning point for me was what I call in my executive loneliness book a surrender. I had to surrender my old way of thinking, my old way of living, and I gave up the fight and starting to seek help and speak up. We spend so much time, many people, to bottle up, hold it up, keeping secret, keeping silent, because we all have our dark side as well. Most human beings, at least, have a dark side as well. And if we don't, accept that that's the case, then it's very hard to see that. And if we don't see that without that awareness, then we cannot seek help, right? So, and many of us have bad habits, and bad habits can turn into addictions if we don't deal with them. And it doesn't matter if it's binge watching Netflix or spending too much on screen time. Or shopping online, whatever it is, it can start as an innocent one time, and then it becomes a bad habit repeatedly, and then before we know it, it's a full-blown addiction, perhaps an escape from someone who has a deadline at work. They're going to send in a report. Instead, they start shopping around on websites online and ordering products, as an escape then. And if that repeats, then we need to watch out. And for any listener who's suffering from something, it is the first line of call. See, who can I speak to about this? Is this someone who I know, who I can trust, who I can share it with? Is it a partner, a friend? And if we don't have someone, then we can always call a coach or a therapist and have a confidential conversation. And just to add to that, we live now in this hybrid world. And myself, as a coach and therapist, I do a lot of my work online. Or most of my work online. You no longer have to be seen in a waiting room to go and see a specialist who can help someone with those conversations.
You've already mentioned executive loneliness, and I wanted to ask you a question about it, because I'm sure you have worked with a lot of executives across industries and age groups. And I wanted to ask you if you think that loneliness is a generational issue or more like universal, and then also if executive loneliness has something to do with generations.
Yeah, I definitely see it going across all generations. And if anything, I see the younger generation struggle more with it for the sake that the human connection is less with a hybrid world. So it takes a higher discipline to build up your social health outside of the work. While the older generation would have a 40, 50 hours per week in an office where you have coffee breaks and lunch with each other, you will all interact. That little small chat and so on. It's not happening so much in this hybrid world. So therefore the discipline relies on getting that social health elsewhere. So the way I do that, being hybrid myself, is make sure I belong to cycling club, running club, swimming academies, triathlon clubs, and I belong to also recovery groups and circles and men's groups and so on. And that discipline is something that I set up all around the world where I spend time, and I reach out to these networks to not always just go out for a run by myself, including this morning. I swam with a big group of people. Tonight, I will go up here in Thailand to run with my running group, and my wife will come as well, and both of us will go. So we will have a social health boost with a group, and after that, we will go for a quick shower and have a dinner myself and my wife and I, so we get some romantic time as well as a couple. So we really need to have this mindset of disciplining ourselves to get those bits and pieces. Otherwise, I think it's really going to be unhealthy for us, because social health is as important as mental and physical health.
I would like to ask on that also a question, Nick, because I'm working also with a CEO at the moment, and what I feel is that he is not looking on himself as he should, which means he was, for example, giving me the hint that when he was in a physical health, which means he was playing football in the past, he was doing sport in the past, he had also then a better mental health. Do you see a connection between being fit, which doesn't mean that all of them should do Ironman, which of course they are welcome to do that. But do you see a connection in your work also with executives, for example, or with your clients, that if you support them to find their more or less time to exercise, that they do better than also in their job, in their position?
Absolutely, 100%. And I mean, when I work with my clients, health is a part of the wheel of life, right? The eight parts, and we will cover it and making sure that we address it. It just has to be there because it has a massive impact. And I say, for any CEOs or executive or entrepreneurs or business owners listening here, is that I see myself when I'm on a computer, sending emails on a call or what I'm doing now, I'm like an administrator, I'm like a manager of the business. But the CEO, that kind of creative strategy, is the leader. That's me when I'm on a run or coming from a long bike ride, because that's when I will get the big ideas. That's when the problem will be solved. So therefore we really got to look after ourselves if we want to deliver the best.
I would like to add on this another question, because this is also my theory where I think also a lot about it. And you know, from our conversations we had in the CCMC course with Dr. Peter G, where he is coaching when he has a walk with his clients through a park or something like that. Have you experienced yourself really that you go for a run or cycling 3, 4 hours? Of course, not running, but cycling. And then you can empty your mind, and they're coming or really solutions to problems where you face in the work environment.
Absolutely. I wrote my first book, Cycling, I would say. I would go out cycling for 4 or 5 hours around Singapore, and I would come home for a shower, eat, have a nap, and then I would spend the whole afternoon writing. That was when I was in the best state. I was then empty from all stress from the previous work week or whatever. I had just emptied it all, and that's when I wrote from that emptiness. But also during the bike ride, I will have a lot of ideas. I remember many times also I even stopped on the bike ride, and I would write things. But if I was in a group, I would wait for the coffee stop, and I will excuse myself first. You go first, and I would go 2 minutes around the corner, and I would write down things because things would have come up. But I will also think about before I go out on the bike ride. Okay, I know now I'm gonna write on this chapter, and therefore, so I would have it with me and thinking about that on the ride. Also, when I give my keynotes, and even when I did my TEDx, I would rehearse my talk typically during a run. So if I'm on the road traveling, I would run, for 45 minutes, 1.5 hour, and a keynote is typically 45 minutes or 1 hour. And I would typically think through the whole keynote from the first slide to the last slide during my early morning run, the same day I was going to deliver the keynote. And if it was a new keynote, I would first at home, having recorded the whole keynote with the slides as speaking, and then I would play it in my headset, perhaps the first few days leading up to the event, listen to my own voice. So I would start memorizing the talk. And then eventually I would turn it off and think through the whole talk. So that's sort of because that's when I think we are very creative, we are functioning well when we are running, and that's the best way for me to get in the right spirit. And I got a reputation in Asia for running a half marathon before most of my big keynotes. So typically I would go out up very early at 5 a.m., run a half marathon, shower, have a breakfast, and just come in and boom, give 100% energy into the room, because that's when I will just be ecstatic.
That's very
Wonderful.
interesting. I wanted to ask you because we've talked about sports now, and also kind of about the digitalization about that we face now, especially my generation and the generations after. And you've already mentioned that you think sport and just doing things beside looking at the computer or like watching movies and anything helps with stress management also, and also just being in better health. Is there anything else that you think applies especially to my generation that we could do different, or like maybe even look at the older generations and take as an example from them?
Yeah, I think it's coming back to community, right? We spoke about sport, and while it's cycling, swimming, running, especially for me, I think everyone have to ask themselves, what do I love to do? I'm, for example, not necessarily a gym person. I will do indoor treadmill if it's 1 meter snow in Sweden outdoors, then I would be on the treadmill. But I wouldn't be so passionate about it. But if the training has to get done, then I would get on the treadmill, right? So but it's about mapping out what we really love to do, and it doesn't matter what we do, but we need to move our body. That is for sure. So if we like hiking, yoga, or Pilates, it doesn't matter. We need to move our body. And I know that there's been a lot of sayings, yeah, we need to exercise 2, 3 hours a week, and I say that's bullshit. I would say 2, 3 hours a day moving the body, and that can be walking to work half an hour, or walking to work, 1 hour and cycle back 1 hour, and then doing something. I believe we need to move our body 2, 3 hours a day. And that could even be that we're standing. I'm standing on my standing desk here now, and on the floor I have a exercise mat which I can do stretches and all kind of things on. And that's what I do between the calls. So I do some exercise the whole time. My whole room is built up almost like a Pilates studio. I have different kind of boards and things and stretches and so on. So I just walk by and maybe for 1 or 2 minutes here and there, and that is included. And I remember when I worked in Jakarta in one office building, there were 7 floors, and I was on the fourth floor, and I made a point of walking to all my meetings, all my engagement around the whole building. And this is Jakarta when it's 30, 40 degrees Celsius, and the staircase was outdoor. So I walked up and down every single time, and I became the leanest and fittest I have ever been because of those interaction, but I enjoyed it and I saw it as a challenge for myself. So I think that would be my call to everyone. Think about the exercise you can do all the time and a few hours a day moving around, whatever you love to do. And then also try to not always do it alone. Try it, if you gotta move 2, 3 hours a day, then maybe half an hour move with other people. That can be taking your wife for a walk. Or it can be just to do some physical activity to move the body in whichever way we like. But that I think is for me absolutely essential.
Yeah. There is one thing which I would like to ask as a from my end for, as a final question, and I hope this question is allowed. It is a more personal one, Nick. We heard a lot about you, what you have done in the past, and you are a great role model. You know that I look up to you, and it is really the journey I really want to go also. But as what the listeners do not know, you are also a father of a son. And of course, we or I see also sometimes that you are posting also the time together with your son. And what advice you give or tips you give your son? Because I think your son is, I don't know exactly how old he is. I think it's 17, 18, something like that, if I'm correct. Which means he's also in the generation Z or Alpha, I think. What, yeah, tips you give him as a older generation to survive also in this hectic world?
Yeah, for a start, he's turning 17 on this Friday, and actually, he was the last person I was chatting with just before coming on here. And so, yeah, my ex-wife and I divorced during my fall. I wasn't able to look after myself. I couldn't look after a job, so I couldn't look after marriage, and I was not the father I should have been. So, without contesting it, I gave full custody of our son to my ex-wife. They moved to Sweden, and as I came into recovery, I realized that the huge part is about the relationships and how important that is. So I made amends and set things right as much as I could. My ex-wife and I have a better relationship now than when we were married. I would say thanks to that work I done. My son and I also have a beautiful relationship. He knows my full story inside out. He actually came with me when I travel Europe as a speaker. He came last, for example, when I gave a keynote in Amsterdam. And of course, I told him before that you're part of this presentation. Are you comfortable sitting in? Because I have a few slides and I'm sharing a story that could be quite personal. And he saluted it. So he's proud of me for taking ownership of for my story and where it was and where I fell short. And he's happy with the way I made amends and how I show up these days. I'm definitely not the disciplinary, the directive kind of father. I'm more of a coaching father, empowering him and knowing that I'm his safe space when he has challenges. There's been problems and issues in his school, and I've been there to ask him to come up with the solutions for himself. And then standing behind him to support him, because I mean, we all go through our challenges, and the last thing he needs from a father is to discipline him or scream at him when he's done something wrong. It's enough for him that perhaps the dean or the school or someone has given him a letter for something that has happened, he will already have the shame and guilt. And all I have to try to understand what is beneath this, what is the main cause of this. So that's how I supported him, and that's how we have a good relationship. And I believe the only thing we can do with younger generation at work and at home is influence them. So for me, that means when he's around me and we just spend 2 weeks together over Christmas on a road trip, that means putting off the phone, putting it away, because I have so many people I know, parents who are asking, why are my children on the phone the whole time? But then I see them on the phone themselves the whole time. So we need to lead by example. And when we travel on that road trip, my phone was put away most of the time. I didn't have it on the kitchen table when we were talking. And I brought paper books for myself, and I gave him a gift with some of the books that I knew he wanted. And we were reading books, and we were talking and so on. And because of that, he's not naturally so much on the phone. But of course, if I pull mine up, then he will pull up his as well. So that's as much as I can do. I don't want to discipline him what he can do and cannot do when it comes to devices, rather than just influencing him.
Being a role model.
Yeah. That's all we can do,
Fantastic.
right?
Yes, fantastic. Rebecca, do you have a final question, or we are
Yes.
coming to the end, or you have a final
Yeah,
question?
final question. But
Okay,
it's
okay.
kind of been talked about already because Nick, you already said that communication is very important, and we've also heard it from our last guests unanimously that they think we should communicate more and not only between the generations, but also in the society overall. And I wanted to ask you, what can we do besides, putting away our phone and talking to each other to kind of communicate more also in families? Because there's also kind of the problem sometimes that, my family and I, sometimes we have like conflicts and we just don't talk about them and we put them aside, but they're kind of lingering in the air. Wanted to ask you what other advice you can give to us and also the listeners.
Yeah, I think the first one is to not communicate too much digitally. And if we feel that there start to be a misunderstanding, hit the sort of pause button and say, let's meet up to discuss this. And if we cannot meet up in person, then get on an online call so you see each other and at least can express yourself and discuss it. Avoiding it is definitely not the right way, but also making it explode by a WhatsApp message or email is also not the right way. And very importantly is that we all humans, we can all be sending a message that maybe what we didn't really mean, maybe we phrased it wrongly, and then it is about making that amend. As soon as we realize that we said something that wasn't very nice or sent the message, we can recall it and we can say, come back with a better message. And that is what I call, making daily amends when we constantly are thinking through it. And we have a chance perhaps each evening before we go to bed to think through the day. Did I say something today that wasn't nice? Did I send an email or a message to someone that isn't nice? Then we can send another message before we go to bed to make that amend so that we can have a good night's sleep. Otherwise, we are the one who's going to suffer. So I think that is very important when it comes to communication.
Thank you very much for all these insights, Nick. I'm very proud that I get in contact with you, and we are in touch since more than 2 years right now. Unfortunately, we have not made it in person, but this will be in the future for sure. One hint I want to give also to all of our listeners, because this was one thing we were not talking about in this podcast, is Nick is himself a very successful podcast host on top of all the other things. I know that he is close to the 300th episode of his podcast, because I saw on LinkedIn it is 294 or 95 he has published. What I have seen, and I'm very happy that I have the chance to speak on his podcast also. I think it is the next week. Would you say two or three words why the listeners should listen to your podcast, Nick? This is a chance to you to promote your podcast also.
Yeah, thank you very much. I very much appreciate our friendship also very much, and I can only dream of becoming as fast Iron Man as you. And hopefully we get a chance to meet soon. I know we tried twice, one in Europe, one in Asia. So the third attempt will happen. Maybe that will be in Kona, Hawaii.
Hopefully.
That would be fantastic. So about my podcast, Limitless, it is about my growth journey then, and having guests who can really talk about their life. I want real life stories there. It's not a selling platform, but rather transformational journeys. I have spoken with a lot of experts on different topics there, but also real average people about their inspirational stories.
Wow, thank you very much for that.
Thank you. And also thank you for coming to our podcast. It was very good and nice to talk to you. And I love your insights and the advice that you have given us. And I'm also part of the younger generation, so I can also apply some of the tips that you said. And thank you for being here. And I hope we can also keep in contact, maybe even with my dad, because you're already talking to each other. And to our listeners, always thank you for listening. And if you have any insights or any things you want to ask, always text us. We're definitely gonna look over that. And that's it for this podcast episode. And until the next one, bye.
Ciao.
Thank you. Bye-bye.